Today we bring you a special Tolkien chat in which Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, and Dave Kale, programming director at Middle Earth Network Radio, discuss their time on the set of the new The Lord of the Rings, War in the North documentary produced by G4 and released on the Machinima YouTube channel. Hello, everyone. I'm Dave Kale, Director of Programming at the Middle Earth Network, and I'm here with a special guest, Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor. And we're going to have a little conversation about a wonderful experience we had. Geez, was it almost a month ago now?
Gosh, it was.
Yeah. Wonderful experience we had in sort of impromptu, unexpected. It was an unexpected party. That's what it was right there. So we were both on set for the filming of a special documentary being produced for the Sci-Fi Channel about the upcoming Warner Brothers Interactive game developed by Snowblind Studios called The Lord of the Rings, War in the North. A pretty interesting game coming out. Very soon, in fact. I believe in like 3 weeks, like early November. So
Yes, I think November 1st, yeah.
That's right. And so we were on set for that, largely because of the man I'm speaking to here, and I just kind of tagged along. Corey, why don't you set this up for us? How on earth did this come about? How did you find out about the interview, and how did this whole thing transpire? I'm sure they gave you months of advance warning.
Oh, yes. Months or hours. It was a very Hollywood kind of affair. Well, I was contacted by email by the director of the studio that was producing the documentary, and that they were doing this this show, and that they wanted to have me on as a Tolkien expert to appear on the documentary and answer some questions and stuff, and I said I'd be happy to do that. And then he adds at the bottom of his email, he says, oh, and by the way, we're filming this Monday, and this was on a Thursday evening, late Thursday evening on the West Coast, or on the East Coast, that I got this email, and he says, oh, by the way, we're filming Monday and Tuesday in LA. So it was like 4 days' notice. But we worked it out, and I had a kind of a crazy trip and flew out there on a very early morning on Tuesday morning, shot the documentary in the afternoon, and then took the red eye back Tuesday night. So, But it was great. I mean, it was a fantastic experience to do this with them. They the crew that were putting this together were really really top notch. They were a really professional group, and so it was really neat getting on the set. It was neat to get to meet the people involved, and even just to kind of be there. I mean, I've never really seen a Hollywood set, you know, as they're as they're actually sort of setting up and filming. And of course, to actually be in the middle of it was really pretty cool. But even just to see it was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I certainly thought so. I mean, I the whole thing seemed like just a whirlwind experience the way it came together. I think I got an email from you like Thursday or Friday saying like, oh, I might be in LA early next week. And I was like,
yeah,
wow. All right. Well, I could take the day off from work. Why not? And the being on set was pretty fun. I was kind of overwhelmed by just like how, you know, I was just, I don't know about you, but I was overwhelmed by the setup. It was amazing how large the crew was, how much equipment they had. They were shelling out the big bucks. I'm sure this is pretty much standard for the other documentaries you've been involved in, right?
Oh yeah. This is the second time that I've been on a documentary like that. The first time was the History Channel show, part of the Clash of the Gods series that was put on by the History Channel back in 2009. That was very different. When I was on that set, that was shot in New York, and it was shot in this little studio apartment in New York, which had been converted into a studio. There were three total people there, and I was sort of kind of sitting on a stool in the like small chin of the studio apartment, waiting for my turn to go in and do the have my turn in front of the camera. It was different. It was very different. I mean, you know, the other was a good production, and I mean, like, you know, it came out fine and everything, but it was definitely different.
Yeah, it really was. It was unlike anything I've really been to either. So what can you remember about the folks who were involved? So I remember the director was a gentleman named Mike, and there was Tracy Williams, Warner Brothers Interactive. So what do you remember about the folks who were involved?
Well, I thought they were really great. I mean, Mike Bullard, the director of the production, was really good. I mean, their production company is an independent production company that does a lot of they work with a lot of video games, making trailers and commercials and documentaries. And I thought that his team was fantastic. I mean, they really had things together and had a really comfortable setup. They chose an amazing site. I mean, the location of the set was really cool. We were in the basement, the basement area, this sort of, I don't know, it was like this kind of crypt area underneath this this old stone mission building out there in LA, and it was this really neat space with this sort of low arched ceilings and dirt floors, and they had made the place up to look like a tavern. They were going for like a sort of a prancing pony effect with it, and they did it. It was great. I mean, they had this awesome wooden furniture and like these casks and things sitting around, and they even had a guy with the smoke machine to kind of make it look just ever so faintly smoky in the room behind us. And anyway, so that was really fun. And I thought that they were fantastic. And it was really neat to get to meet Tracy Williams from Warner Brothers Interactive and you know, sort of hear. I was really just glad to hear how involved she was. It was one of the things, you know, you often... I know that, you know, many people certainly are under the impression when they see things like the video games and stuff like that, that at least the impression I've always gotten from conversations with other Tolkien fans is that sort of the assumption on the part of most Tolkien fans is that the people involved in making these games are like, you know, kind of money grubbers out to like make a buck on Tolkien stuff because they can't. But, you know, like I was really impressed with how dedicated to Tolkien stuff she really seemed to be. I mean, like the people I was impressed with, you know, sort of her as a representative of Warner Brothers Interactive, that they clearly are dedicated to what they're doing and are really interested in actually exploring Tolkien's works in interesting ways. And that was, it was, you know, our conversations with her were really a highlight of my day, even if just for that reason. It's just, you know, just to sort of dispel some of the, kind of cynical assumptions I think that a lot of people, make about, video game creators and stuff like that. You know, just as, you know, many people were kind of interested to hear or reassured by kind of discovering from the documentaries on the Lord of the Rings films that, you know, how much Peter Jackson had always been a Tolkien fan and was really engaged with it. You know, I think that it was really neat to hear and sort of see evidence, some sort of similar evidence, at Warner Brothers Interactive. So that, I thought that was really cool, and it makes me it made me not only more interested in this game, The War in the North, but interested to see what they come up with in the future.
Yep, I completely agree. I was really kind of stunned at the care that was being put into this, and in particular the interest that Tracy Williams seemed to put on authenticity about, you know, being good stewards of the Tolkien story and of the world that all the fans love, and trying to, all the while they're, you know, obviously trying to make some money and sell a product, but also to tell authentic stories that really, even though they're new stories, they really belong in Tolkien's world. So I think we're running short on time, so we need to get to the really big couple of pieces about it. First, you got to meet somebody famous. We both got to meet somebody famous, didn't we?
It was a sort of a cool surprise. I had no idea, really, the other people who were involved in this, but they had all invited a couple of the actors from the Lord of the Rings films to be in this documentary, and apparently Dominic Monaghan had been there on the Monday, on the day before we were there, so I didn't get a chance to meet him. But Sean Astin, who of course played Sam in the films, was on right after me, so basically we were kind of hanging out and talking to people anyway, so we got to hang out and watch Sean Astin's interview and get to talk with him afterwards, and that was a lot of fun. It was funny, as my listeners will know from comments I've made on many occasions, I am a big proponent of the Sam Gamgee is the ultimate hero of the Lord of the Rings school of thought. And so I was, you know, I was kind of sharing this with Sean Afton afterwards, say, you know, Sam Gamgee really was the primary hero of the Lord of the Rings. And the funny thing was, I don't think he believed me. That is, I got the distinct impression that he just thought I was flattering him by saying that, but I you know, of course I really meant it, but,
yeah, but he didn't think you were being just like a weird, creepy fan at all.
No. Fortunately, that was very clear that he did not think that in any way. So that was good.
Hey, he didn't. He sat and talked to you for a good 5 or so minutes before he started slowly trying to edge away.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was good. We had a nice conversation. So that was good. Yeah. I mean, it's. You know, it was very clear from, you know, from hearing his, from talking to him, you know, he clearly is very, you know, it's obvious that even now in retrospect, 10 years later, that, you know, being in those films was really a huge thing for him. And, you know, that he was very, very personally moved and very involved with those films. But he still doesn't know very much about Tolkien is also pretty clear.
Yes.
Not somebody who, as much as that experience meant to him, he was not converted into really being a Tolkien fan by that.
At least not a scholar.
No, not exactly. Not exactly. He was showing a very loose grasp on the plot of The Hobbit, for instance. But you know, like whatever, it's fine.
That's right.
I don't demand that I mean, I realize that actors in films are, you know, they are professionals who are getting paid to do what they do. You know, it's like he doesn't actually have to be Sam Gamgee or anything. You know, it's fine. Like I understand, but
hey,
but
at least he's read it. I don't know if you've heard this before, but apparently Michael Gambon absolutely refused to read Harry Potter once he was cast
as
Dumbledore. Yeah, because he just felt like he didn't want to be tethered to the Dumbledore of the book. He wanted to play his own Dumbledore. As you can imagine, that he wasn't universally reviled, but he certainly didn't make any friends with that comment. So,
right. Probably like J.K. Rowling is probably among the people who were made his unfriends by that comment, perhaps. But.
Yes. So tell me one last thing. What did you think of the game?
I thought the game was really, I mean, we didn't get a chance to play it for too long, but I thought it's definitely, in concept, I think it's really good. That is, I mean, the concept is actually quite similar to sort of the original core concept of Lord of the Rings Online. That is, that you're playing a party of characters who has to go on a quest up in the north and, you know, the old ruins of Arnor. You know, you start by going up to Fornost, and you end up apparently going to like Gundabad, the mountain fortress of the goblins in the north and stuff. And, certainly the scenery was amazing. I think video games have the best, are one of the best vehicles to do. That is kind of filling in the blank spaces, allowing you to travel in some of these places which are mentioned in Tolkien's books, which you never go to, and which are never described and never really have any stories told about them, though you know there are stories about them, like Fornost. We're told that was the great kings of the north. Hooray, but we never go there. We never really hear much about it. And so it's really neat to get a chance to kind of go and, you know, sort of be a part of this story. And I know that, you know, like not everybody sort of thinks about video games that way and really, kind of thinks of them as a sort of a sub-creative enterprise. But I think they, you know, there are ways in which they can be. And I think that's pretty interesting. I think especially, you know, one of the primary way in which The War in the North is different, I think, conceptually from the Lord of the Rings Online thing is that it's much more narrative driven. That is, it's much more of a linear plot, than just kind of an open world for people to explore. I know that there are like quests and things in Lord of the Rings Online, but it's still just pretty open. Whereas this is much more sort of plot based, which I think is interesting because it tells this other story, this story, which parallels and goes along next to, Tolkien's main story and takes part in these other places, but really kind of fleshes them out. And also characters like, you know, getting a chance to meet, Elrond's sons, Eladon and Elro here, which is pretty cool. I thought that was one of my favorite parts. That and the U catastrophe button. That is apparently early in the game you rescue an eagle and then you, like, there's this button combo that you push to like have the eagle come and swoop down and crush things. Never gets old, I found. So yes, having an actual U catastrophe button on the Xbox controller, pretty awesome.
Yes.
But generally, I thought it was great. I look forward to someday having time to play it more.
Or play any Lord of the Rings game.
For instance, yes. One of the things I would do if I had much more time. I thought that it was definitely worthwhile. And I would be very, I mean, the thing that would really drive me to want to play it more is to really see more about the story that they're telling, because I think that video games like this can be, I think, a really interesting medium for storytelling if they're done properly. And again, I was encouraged by the effort that they were putting into it, that they really are thinking about it in those kinds of narrative terms. I know that's not what everybody looks for in a video game, but for me, I thought that was something I was very interested by.
Yep, I completely agree. Well, before I let you go, I want to give you a chance here to answer the question that you refused to answer during the documentary, and that is, how do you feel about that, you know, the sort of the driving theme or that line from the book that's behind this whole game about, you know, the war in the North, where Gandalf's talking to the hobbits and explaining about the valiant efforts that went into defending the North from the forces of Sauron during the War of the Ring?
Yes. Well, they did kind of take that quote a little bit out of context and alter it in very significant ways. But basically, yeah, I mean, that was the place where Gandalf was talking about the fights up in the Lonely Mountain and Dale. But there's, it's still, it's like the concept, you know, they were kind of taking the idea of the valiant deeds that were done by people off screen, you know, or, you know, off stage in the Lord of the Rings, and kind of expanding that. But I felt it was a little bit unfair, because clearly the people who were running the documentary didn't know that the quotation had been altered from the, I know that the people who made the game knew that they were kind of, you know, altering that in order to set up the game. But I don't think the production people did know that. So,
yes.
So they asked me to comment on that quote, and I was like, that would require a long explanation and me saying that, they changed the quote.
And they kept asking everyone that, and everyone else, they fell in line and said, oh yeah, I think it's wonderful. They're pushing the boundaries and going into the unexplored regions of Middle Earth. Yeah. And you had to be the one jerk who's like, I'd rather not.
I know. Well, I said I like the concept, but yeah, the quotation is just, that's not the quotation in the book.
Well, we won't hold it against him, will we?
Yeah, no. It's fine. I understand. I understand the spirit of the thing. So,
well, I want to thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts. Much delayed. I've been meaning to do this for a while, and I'm going to write up a little report for Arwen for Middle Earth News, and then share our interview as well. And any messages you'd like to pass out into the great beyond that hopefully the Warner Brothers people will catch wind of?
Ooh, yes. Gosh, there should be. Hang on. I'm already 4 minutes late for section.
Have your game developers sign up for classes at Midgard.
Yes, exactly. That's kind of more or less what I would like to say. Yeah, no, I can't think of anything less crass than that. No, I don't think so.
All right, Corey. Well, I'll let you go teach now.
All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Have a good evening.
Thanks, you too. Talk to you later.
Yep, bye.
Bye.
Before we let you go, we want to remind you that spring enrollment is open at the Mythgard Institute. There are two wonderful classes being taught this spring that you should definitely not miss out on. One on Tolkien and Lewis, taught by Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, but another one about the boy wizard Harry Potter, taught by the Potter pundits of Pottercast fame, Travis Prinzi, John Granger, and James Thomas. You do not want to miss out on these classes. They're going to allow you to look at the literature that you love in a way that you've never done so before. Go to Mythgard.org and sign up today.